Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Chronicle. I'm your host, Karan. All right, so yes, today we have a special guest. We have a filmmaker named Eric Christensen here. So today we'll talk about some of his films, his current project. We'll talk about mental health and stigma and trauma and things like that. So I'm super excited. So please stay tuned for this episode. It's going to be a good one. All right, so let's get started. So for nearly 30 years, filmmaker Eric Christensen has created films chronicling trauma and grief recovery. Eric rose from the ashes of his own trauma to create a lifelong mission of following the journeys of survivors of this devastating life events as they struggle to heal and find hope again. Supported by clinical research and used as a tool by top mental health institutions, Eric's four feature documentaries educate and create awareness around the complex and myriad issues of trauma and grief, and in the process, show the resilience of the human spirit. Through his work, the seven-time Emmy winner emphasizes that sharing a similar experience with someone in need lets them know they're not alone, and a gesture that can simply be the first step in their recovery. So let's welcome Eric. Can you tell me a little bit more about your film, Unmasking Hope?
My film, Unmasking Hope, is pretty much, it's the evolution of all my work in the last 30 years. It's my fourth film, my personal film, I guess you would say, independent films. And it's, you know, it's a documentary about basically trauma recovery. And all my films and of those four films have been about grief and trauma recovery. But what I say in the evolution, I've learned so much, and there's certain things that I want to bring out in this particular film, Unmasking Hope. And some of the main topics are that my films are built with an aggregate of stories. It's just not on one subject.
Okay.
So in Unmasking Hope, I've decided to feature not only like military trauma, which I did my last two films on, then the film before that was about surviving a disaster. I wanted to really mix up the different kinds of traumas, because one thing I noticed when I was working in just in the military traumas and with PTSD and things like that, that the healing is so similar from human to human. I believe God has put together the same way that we would get a scratch or some sort of, you know, scratch or something on ourselves, and it would heal over and the scab, and then it heals. I believe God's like has this way that he heals trauma, and it's similar to all of us, no matter where you're from or what your age is or anything. So what I want to try to do is to get this aggregate of people from different traumas and show how we all heal in a similar fashion. And that really produces a feeling of togetherness and tolerance that when you see that, we're like, you know, we're all basically the same, you know, even though my trauma is different, I can still relate to you. And you seem, you know, I did a podcast out of Nigeria, and you know, we so connected. We're all one people, and we all feel the same way. And that was what was behind Unmasking Hope. So we have mass shooting survivors. We have 9/11 survivors. We have sexual trauma survivors. And of course, I have to have my military trauma survivors in there. Mm-hmm. And so it's a real mix of different survivors, but they're all telling the same story. It's different circumstances, but the same story.
Okay.
And so that's where I'm kind of progressing with my work. And that's what we're doing with Unmasking Hope. And hopefully we'll have a premiere in less than a year on public television with this film.
Oh, very nice. Okay. Yeah, that's very exciting. I'm very excited to actually to see that. So why is the new film Amassing Hope so important in today's world?
Oh, you know, I'm a different answer for that is being uncovered every day, you know, okay. as we progress into basically uncharted territory with this whole thing, and then the, you know, the quarantining and, and it's put a real focus on, unfortunately, on mental health. I mean, when the prescription is isolation for these, for a lot of us that have, that have all sorts of basic issues with mental health issues and trauma related issues, addiction related issues, isolation is not probably one of the best things. So going back to your question, why is it so important right now? I feel that Unmasking Hope will be, and my other films have been, a rallying point where a lot of people can view this film and then come to a commonality. And on one side of the screen, it's producing awareness and education. So then those people can say, you know, open up their hearts a little bit and start to connect with the people in the film and not have just such a brief one sentence answer for everything, and understand and produce empathy towards those individuals. For the people that are also going through trauma related, and we're all going through, you know, basically this collective trauma with COVID, you know, with the people that have going through their own traumas, then they can identify with the people in the film and connect that way and see the hope that's in the film, because that's a major component of Unmasking Hope, is getting through major traumas and then seeing the hope and the healing on the other side. So there's two pieces that are really important, I feel, right now to the audience and in this particular environment.
Okay. Yes, thank you for that. I believe there is so much going on right now that we do have to figure out how do we push through this trauma and get to that other side and have that hope to be able to get to the other side.
And you know, and some of the examples in the film are extreme and some are less extreme of the different traumas, but I think anybody can really connect and relate to it. And you know, we're probably about 3/4 of the way done when this COVID hit. Mm-hmm. And we went back and did some remote interviews and follow up with some of these people of how the COVID's really affected them and how this quarantine has really changed the whole trajectory of their healing.
Okay.
It's made it a lot more difficult.
Yeah.
You know? And to connect, to have true connection, because, you know, as I say, when the prescription is isolation, you know, it makes it, you know, we're social creatures. And one of the big components of healing is reaching out and connecting with people. So,
yes.
You know, like we're doing this Zoom right now so we can see each other and talk. Zoom's become invaluable. I mean, for my own personal recovery, because I've been in recovery now for quite a while from drugs and alcohol, the Zoom has been indispensable for me to get to my meetings.
Okay.
I had a meeting this morning on Zoom. So, you know, it's just, it's all brand new territory we're trying to
figure out. Yeah, and as a therapist, I use the term hope a lot, and getting to get through to some of my clients to talk about some of their trauma, and especially with COVID, this isolation, how has this been affecting you? And I will normally start my sessions with that particular question, like, how is COVID affecting you right now? And a lot of times it is, I don't know what to do, you know?
You know, I hear that so much in, you know, in my meetings of how it, you know, in my recovery meetings, it's how it's completely rewritten the playbook on, you know, recovery. And, you know, one of the big components was meeting in person, you know, and, and having that sort of interaction. And now we've had to pivot, and I think it's pretty successful on a lot of different levels with the Zoom. I mean, I really like it. What's amazing, I know we're getting off on a little angle, but what's amazing about the the Zoom and the meetings, I'm seeing people I haven't seen for a long time. You know, I'm seeing people that I've gotten sober with that are now living on the other side of the United States. And they're coming all to the meetings again. And it's a great feeling to see, oh my gosh, they're still sober. We're still doing the same thing.
Right.
And we're connecting here. So, you know, we're pivoting and we're making it work, you know, and I really challenge anybody in any sort of recovery and to reach out and use the tools that are available and get creative.
Yeah. Yeah.
To be able to not isolate, to reach out and connect with other human beings.
Exactly. And yeah, I think that is going to be the biggest thing for us to get through this whole pandemic. So going off of that, what do you believe is the lasting impact of a pandemic on mental health?
Wow, the lasting impact. You know, going back to here's what I would like it to be. And going back to what we're talking about is, I hope the lasting impact is resilience, that we learn something from this.
Yeah.
That instead of taking away a big negative and saying, wow, that really put me into a tailspin, you know, I'd rather for people to really dig down and see the positives of it, to pivot, to see, oh my gosh, I made it through this. I've learned how to reach out despite this isolation.
Right.
And so now reaching out and go, I'm dying to go to a real meeting. You know, I hear there are a couple meetings are starting in the park outdoors and everything now. I'm excited to go do that. And I'm just talking from my own personal experience.
Right.
But
right.
Going back to what the lasting impacts are, I would like it to be, you know, a little badge. You know, I made it through this thing. Now what the outcome looks like, we don't know. That's a whole nother question and subject is the unknown, you know, how do I sit with the unknown? How do I really accept my powerlessness over this situation?
Right.
That's a whole other question, but for overall coming out of this, I would like people to say, you know, I made it through and I was resilient. I found ways to continue my recovery. I found ways to recover despite this situation. And so now it's going to be easier in a normal world once we get back to whatever that will be. Yeah. But there's a whole other question of what that is and how we get there in the unknown and dealing right. with the unknown, because we're not good at accepting our powerlessness.
Yes. Yes. And that, again, going back to my experience with being a therapist, that is something that has come up in so many sessions is, what do we do in this unknown territory? Like how do I make all of these plans or do all of these things? But I don't know exactly where it's going to be in say 3 months from now.
You know, and then what I was thinking when you're saying that is, then is that unlocking a new feeling of accepting the powerlessness,
right?
That knowing and accepting what is now, you know, and getting more into the moment instead of right. all these plans, you know, our plans are kind of put on hold for a lot of it right now.
Yeah.
So it's exercise in acceptance. And, you know, for me, you know, acceptance is key. That I can accept things the way they are. I can see the things I can change and try to change the things I can. And then also know, and this basically, you know, also know the difference between the two, what I can change and what I can't.
Yep.
Yep. And so, you know, acceptance is key here.
Yeah.
It's tough for people to accept they're powerless. And, yes. I see it manifest in various ways in people and how they react. And you see it just so blatantly on Facebook, unfortunately, and people's posts, because when confronted with the unknown and the powerlessness of the situation, people like to become experts, people like to become conspiracy theorists, people like to point fingers, and that's like one of the most voraciously point fingers, and that's one of the most detrimental kind of things. Well, absolutely. It's his fault, it's this, I'm sorry, but I don't know if you can really point to somebody ate a bat in China. We know that much,
right?
But who else's fault is that?
Exactly.
I don't want to make fun of it, but what I'm trying to get to the point is, one of our reactions, and I think we have to look deep down, one of our reactions is to look externally and try to grab onto things to make it make sense when it might not make sense. God's in control. Yep. For me personally.
Yep.
And it's like there's a whole different kind of set of rules there. It goes back to acceptance. I don't have a lot of power over where this is going.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So yeah, just going off of your experience and your experience with recovery and trauma, how have you parlayed your personal experience surviving trauma into your work?
Oh my gosh. How have I leveraged what I've went through? How have I leveraged my experiences into my work? It's everything for me. My personal, having went through the Painted Cave fire disaster, over 30 years ago.
Okay.
That was kind of my calling card. I got clean and sober after that. My work changed. I've been in this industry for a long time. And before that fire, my work was all glitz and music videos and everything. And after that, my work really changed. And that's when I did my first film, Faces in the Fire, about the recovery after after a disaster. And that was the beginning of this whole calling that I have. So how does my experience interface with what I do? It's to me, it's a gift that I've been able to go through these things. And for example, this is such a cool thing too, is we're working with two mass shooting survivors.
Okay.
I'm very careful to call them survivors. The only people that are victims are people that have passed away mm-hmm. during the result of the trauma. I think you can honestly say there are some Holocaust victims, but the people that have made it through, I don't see too many victims. I see people that are survivors. I think no matter how far you went down, I kind of went on a tangent here again, but how far it's hit you down, you still can hit back. But one of the neat things that I've been able to see is that an experience as part of what I have went through is we're working with these mass shooting survivors. And it turns out that we come across these people. They are kind of drawn to the projects. We look for them, but so we found our main mass shooting survivor, and we're like, great, da, da, da. And we get a call the next day, and it's another mass shooting survivor, same mass shooting, Route 91.
Okay.
And it turns out, she is actually good friends with the first one because they had met at a mass shooting survivor's retreat. And so I get a text from them the other day of them together hanging out. And so going back to your original question, I know what that feels like to be able to be with somebody else and only they understand you because they've been through what you've been through.
Right.
Me being a drug addict and alcoholic, when I'm with my people, with another alcoholic, and we're talking alcoholic to alcoholic, there's nobody else can understand my crazy thinking, even in recovery and the path that we've taken. I understand that bond on that level because of what I went through. So when I saw that picture, I got teary eyed. I go, praise God that you have somebody like that, that you right. found this other person. You were at the same music festival and now you've connected on this spiritual level, really, of being two survivors at the same event.
Right.
So that's, you know, that's how, that's what I bring to this,
okay,
that understanding, you know, and the gift that I went through this and all these different things. So it creates a huge amount of empathy, and I love the word empathy.
Yeah.
For me, you know, it's not just sympathy. I don't, you know, it's empathy. I understand how you feel. I understand what that is.
Right.
I may not have understood, you know, the situation exactly. It's not mine, but I do understand the feelings and the importance. Yeah. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, no, thank you. Thank you for sharing that. Okay. So, what do you do to promote your own mental health?
Wow. Three things. One thing, I constantly connect with other people that are similar to me.
Okay.
You know, I was in my Zoom meeting this morning, and that's really important to me. Even though I was highly distracted this morning, that's another thing about Zoom. You really have to, like,
yes.
That's why I like my Friday Zoom meeting, because it's a book study and we go through our book, and then
okay,
I have to read or I get lost.
Yeah.
But a big part is connecting with groups and connecting with my tribe, you know, my survivors, my fellow survivors, mm-hmm, mm-hmm, which are also in recovery.
Yeah.
And that's it. And then, you know, and we chat about things. But then when it really comes down to, like, chatting and really comes down to real discussion and opening up and being vulnerable, I do have my mentor, you know, and I call him my sponsor.
Yeah.
And, but I shall remain anonymous, but it's very important. And he's 84 years old, has 55 years of sobriety, and he knows what's going on with me. And yeah, he's a man.
Yeah.
You know, and they say, you know, I follow a man that follows God, you know, and it's very important to have that equation for me. And it's very important for me to be open with him.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, and I meet once a week with him, and, you know, and sometimes we just jaw it up, just have breakfast. And other times I have a lot that I need to bring to the table, and he does too, you know? And so it keeps me current.
Right. Right.
Because I feel at 57, I see all these other men running around, and I personally feel like this. I feel like a 12-year-old boy sometimes. Screw this. I don't want this. Look what I ended up with. I want to go over here. I'm going to take my ball and go over. And, you know, it's like, but no, that's, you know, as John says, you got to put your big boy pants on. And I see all these men acting out on that at you know, mid-age or whatever they call it. You know, thank God for John. And then the third thing, and this is no order of importance, you know, I need a spiritual program. I need a spiritual set of, you know, I need some direction. And it needs to be spiritual to me. And I have to answer to a power way bigger than me that has a plan. And I love Batman and I love Heath Ledger. One of my favorite performances. He goes, do I look like a man with a plan? You know, but I need that. I need that blueprint for my life. And, you know, I find it through my recovery program and through the Bible. So,
okay.
You know, that's what works for me. But, you know, also I see other people working all sorts of different ways.
Right.
But
yeah.
That spiritual connection is really important. So that's kind of the three things.
Okay. Yeah. I'm a huge proponent for self-care. And that is the one thing that any paid client that walks through my door, that is one of the first things we talk about. So that is always one thing that I like to talk about with anyone that I'm interviewing is what is it that promotes self-care, and like, how do you do that? And I talk about like the different types of self-care as well. And how that works out with different people.
Mm-hmm. You know, I love the saying, I'm trying to think of it exactly. We're spiritual beings having a human moment.
I like
you
that.
Know? And that's the truth. You know, we're in this bag of bones and we're moving through this world right now. And I need to take care of that spiritual side.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. No, I like that so much. Thank you. Thank you for sharing that. So yeah, I actually wanted to go back to the film for a minute and just ask you to talk a little bit more about this masking concept that you're using in the film.
Oh, you know, the masking, okay. In the masking and unmasking hope, you know, there's a lot of different levels to that. And there's a lot of different levels to the film. I mean, one is so obvious, it's uncovering hope. It's unmasking hope on the first level. But the real thing that where we really started talking about this, and I took it a little bit further with Dr. Arya Shalev out of New York University. He actually went back to some university in Israel now.
But okay.
But what we were discussing is we all wear these masks. And I mean, even in normal life, when we go into our work, we have a certain mask we wear daddy mask, we wear this mask, you know, and for the people that went through severe trauma and the people that are dealing with mental health issues, they have their various masks. And to a certain extent, these masks do serve us, and they're a natural part of healing and surviving. You know, Dr. Shalev would talk about, you know, the mother that, you know, has survived the severe trauma incident or whatever it is. But in the morning, she puts on her mommy mask, you know, and she takes care of the kid, makes sure the sandwiches are made, gets them off to school. Well, when we're going to school. And so now, now in the area of COVID, makes her breakfast and makes sure they get in front of the computer and serves as the mom. And underneath her is a very raw, you know, nerve from what she's going through. That mask really works for us. You know, it gets us through a lot. And by putting on that mask, we can survive a lot of different situations. But it's also when the mask goes a little bit too far and it starts to cover us up and we can't get it off again, basically. And that mask can turn into workaholism, alcoholism, drug addiction. It can turn into physical abuse. It can turn into all sorts of other unsavory things when it's went too far. And so the idea is to get behind that mask, get behind to the root of the feelings and the truth behind the trauma and the truth behind the incident. And once we can reveal that and the individual can sit with it, then that mask can start to melt off. And we can, and there's glimpses of the person that's underneath. And that's kind of the whole, you know, storyline for Unmasking Hope, because it is about the trauma, but we don't dwell on the trauma, but it's about finding that healing. It's about uncovering and taking off that mask and finding our true selves.
Okay.
And underneath that mask is hope, you know, that hope of being who we were born to be.
Right.
You know,
right.
Who God made us to be. And that's the center of Unmasking Hope. And it's an honor to watch these people go through this and tell their story and see them in various stages of shedding their masks.
Yeah.
Because after doing this for 30 years, I can come in and meet somebody and pretty closely know where they are basically in their healing. And it's really, and then accept that for where they are and then be able to meet them there. It's pretty darn cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So how can we as podcasters, filmmakers, content creators, anything like that, help to erase the stigma that is surrounding mental health, trauma, recovery, all of those things. How can we help to erase that in our content?
You know, that's a great question. And how can we really combat stigma as content creators in what we do? And I think for me, and I was quoted as saying this in an article in Medium, is that our personal stories are so important. And to be able to get them out there and tell our stories, and not in a selfish, aggrandizing way.
Right.
You know, but I think our personal stories are so valuable for others to hear, especially people that are a little bit further along in the healing. And those stories will connect with others. And they hear that story. And that's what I do. That's what my films do. Like I explained, on one side is the awareness, you know, the people that not necessarily have experienced the things I see in my film, it creates awareness and empathy. Mm-hmm. So it creates a certain tolerance when they encounter the veteran, when they encounter the sexual abuse survivor. It creates an understanding and empathy and tolerance. And then on the other side of that is the people that have went through trauma see these people, and it creates an identification. Oh, wow, they went through a very similar thing, and look at them healing. So for us as content creators, it's a huge responsibility to allow people to tell their stories and to be kind of a conduit for that. And if we have our own story, be brave enough to tell it in a very real way. And the one thing I don't like is the pet peeve is the people that aggrandize it, that sensationalize it, that turn it into something more personalized than just putting out their story so it can help somebody else.
Yeah.
You know, but I think one of the biggest things that we have is a responsibility to tell true, honest stories about that include hope.
Yeah.
You know,
absolutely.
Because we need a lot of hope out there right now.
Yeah. Yeah, that's been my hope with my podcast, is to be able to get this out there and provide a platform for people to be able to tell their stories, and for someone to be able to relate to me if I'm telling a story about myself or about something that I've gone through. I really want to open this up for people to be able to tell their stories in any variety of things.
And I can definitely feel that vibe.
thank you so much. All right, so I wanted to shift gears a little bit and talk about your interest in filmmaking and how did you get into making films?
Oh my gosh. I think one of my earlier memories is in about second grade. I had an 8mm camera, and that was like the first film I made with a script, because I remember playing with that camera a lot more. But somewhere it started around second grade. But here's the strange thing is, and I remember this very clearly, almost where I was standing on the playground, is I just felt like I had this kind of message, but I didn't know what it was.
Okay.
So I had to keep pursuing this filmmaking thing, you know, and, you know, it's just pretty funny with the 8mm film. You have 3 minutes and 47 or 46 seconds or something of film on each roll. And it was very physical, and it took a lot of effort, and had to get my mom to take me down to, you know, the place to get it developed. But I always knew that. And it never came clear to me until, what, in second grade, you're about 7, 8 years old, I was 27 years old when my home burned down in the Panic Cave fire. And then that was, I think God felt that, you know, you've been through the boot camp, you know what you're doing with your craft now, here's your calling, you know. And
right.
So that's what really set me up into the direction that I'm pursuing now. You know, and I tell my wife, I'm like, man, I don't know if I have it in me to do another film after Unmasking Hope. I'm like, the the independent fundraising and all that. And it's not like it's a huge money-making venture.
Right.
And, but that's not why I'm in it. But I tell my wife, I don't know if I'm going to do another one of these right now. Mm-hmm. And she just laughs because she knows something else will fall. And so I continue to do what I do, you know, and, yeah. It's something I've done all my life. And okay. Kind of neat to think about that. I mean,
yeah,
I don't know how many people get to do something their whole life.
Right.
You know, since they're
right.
8 years old. So
that's amazing. Yeah, that is very true. There are not very many people that can say, I have done this particular thing my entire life. That's very cool.
You know, it's funny. I have two boys, one's graduated from college, the other one's right in the middle of college. And my one middle boy plays football, and he goes, Dad, you don't know what it's like to do something your whole life and want to do it so badly, because his football season was canceled this year.
Yeah.
And I kind of just go, I know he doesn't want to hear it. So I go, oh yeah, I kind of know. I know what it's like to do something your whole life and want to excel at it. So.
Okay. So what has been some of your other films that you have worked on?
Well, within the genre, I guess you would say, of my trauma recovery films, that would be Faces in the Fire, which was about the Painted Cave fire disaster tube, if you Google Faces in the Fire. And then my second film, which came almost 8 years later, because I got super busy in the business doing other films, and we'll talk about those if you want to. But
yeah,
my other film was Homecoming, a Vietnam Vet's Journey. And I went on a motorcycle run with 300 Vietnam veterans across the United States to the wall in Washington, D.C. And it was not a motorcycle run. It was a pilgrimage. And it was a healing pilgrimage for these guys. And that's where I kind of, you know, earned my badge and fell in with the military and side of trauma. And then several years later, I did Searching for Home, Coming Back from War, which was about soldiers of all generations returning home from war. And the guys that are coming home now. And that was a very close look at finding home after being on the battlefield. And then Unmasking Hope is my current film right now. But in between that, I've done lots of other stuff.
Yeah,
IMAX films and did a stint with rap videos. I don't know how I fell into that. Then I became the king of toothpaste for a while, and I did all these toothpaste commercials. So
nice.
It's quite a business.
Okay. Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, it sounds like it has been a very diverse and very rewarding journey for you.
Yeah, but I keep coming back to my calling, and that's, you know, right now that's my main focus is evolving and doing films that are more and more effective in reaching out and touching people about trauma recovery and grief recovery too, which is really the next level of trauma.
Absolutely. And being able to make it through those stages of grief and talking, having someone to be there to have that conversation with.
You know, it's interesting because my first film, Face in the Fire, you know, this is a film about grief recovery. And then trauma recovery got to be such a such a thing. I mean, it was kind of the word of the day for a while. And that's during Searching for Homecoming, or right after I finished Homecoming. And but really, I'm coming back to this whole idea. It really is about the grief. It really is about that grief recovery after you lose something. And it could be anything.
Yeah.
You know, it's the innocence that you lost in the war. It's the friends, but it's also, it's just, you know, we've lost our freedom. We've lost all sorts of things through this COVID thing. There's a lot of grief to kind of unpack right now.
Yeah.
And I'm really fortunate to work with Dr. Catherine Shears out of New York. Out of Columbia University in New York. And she has the Center for Complex Grief. And she's working with me on this film. And it unpacks a whole new area to explore and also put out information for people so they become aware of their grief process.
Yeah. And speaking of like recovery and even like collective trauma, which is something that we're all going through currently with COVID, how can we get through a collective trauma and find a path to recovery?
Wow. How can we get through the collective trauma of, I mean, there's so many things going on, you know, on top of the COVID.
Right.
This raucous political atmosphere. And
I mean,
so many things. But I think one of the things is, there's two things, is, you know, just because you have an opinion doesn't mean that you have to state it.
I think
all this discord makes everything so much worse, you know, and it says, I think in the Bible, a wise man keeps his mouth closed, you know, and that's kind of the truth. But the thing is, I guess we all have to support our causes, but it gets to the point of being very detrimental to the people. It creates a very, rough atmosphere, for lack of a better word.
Yeah.
For everybody, that includes, on top of everything else, we have the surface noise now of the COVID. Then on top of that, we have this whole, you know, you can't even call it a dialogue anymore because people have gotten so polarized, and it creates I can't even come up with the word. It creates just a very uneasy atmosphere.
Yes.
And then, you know, the second part of that is that we just have to take the time to really connect. Mm-hmm. And people are, again, I say, you know, they want to do something. So they're posting on Facebook and they're posting their opinion and all this. And, you know, the real thing that you can do if you want to help society, it's just what Michael Jackson said. It's the man in the mirror.
Yeah.
You start with yourself and you make those changes in yourself. And I think Gandhi said a very similar thing. You make those changes in yourself, like we were talking about, those three things. You know, institute those three things into your life. And then, you know, really honestly, try to connect with other people and listen to what they say instead of waiting for your turn to talk.
Yeah.
You know, when you have a chance to, in this time when we're all isolated, you know, reach out to those people that you think might be having a tough time, even if it sounds like they're doing okay. You know, and it's the people in your circle, and you can make a big difference because that stuff spreads. You know,
absolutely.
The smile spreads. Listening to somebody honestly and caring about them spreads.
Yeah.
You know, and you'll be surprised how many similarities, you know. And I had a friend of mine call the other day, and his daughter is about 20 years or so older, and she was going in for a colonoscopy for Crohn's disease.
Okay.
I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm so glad you called, because my son was diagnosed with ulcerative colitis just a month ago. And so he's like, oh my gosh, finally somebody else. And you never know those connections that God, and what I'm saying is through something that you can help somebody else with. So true connection is really, really important. And staying out of that battle and that discussion and creating such a hostile atmosphere, that's a good word.
Another,
you know, and I think that's how we can kind of survive and make things a little bit better. But you know, it's like, just listen to Man in the Mirror and listen to that, the brilliance of those lyrics.
Absolutely.
You know, so.
Okay. Yeah, so that's actually all the questions that I have for you. Is there anything that you would like my listeners to know? Any last words, anything like that?
Well, you know, actually what I just said was pretty much my, you know, one thing is about connecting and changing yourself and being okay. The person that institutes the change in themselves, because it spreads out from there.
Yeah.
And then on a film level is, you know, we're finishing up Unmasking Hope. And if you're interested in finding out more about the movie, you can go to unmaskinghopethemovie.com. And also, we are a 501c3. We have an umbrella from the International Documentary Association. So if you're interested in making a donation towards helping us finish a film, we're like in the red zone, using a football analogy, and we're right there, and that would help. So unmaskinghopethemovie.com, you can go there and donate. And to find out more about me, you can go to ecproductions.com, and those are updated fairly frequently, and you can find out my latest podcasts, what I'm doing, and the progress on my film Unmasking Hope is also there.
Very nice. All right. Well, I would like to thank you for being here and sharing this knowledge with all of us, and sharing this film with us. It sounds like it's going to be such a great film. And the trailer is on your website. And I watched that, and it's phenomenal.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, there's more information about the various survivors, about the experts, about our amazing crew that we're working with. And we're starting to shoot a couple more sequences this month, and we'll wrap it up in November. Then I'll be in the edit suite for 6 months. So we'll see how that goes.
Nice. Yeah. All right. Well, yes. Thank you again for being here. It was such a pleasure talking to you and being able to get to know a little bit more about you.
I super appreciate it. Thank you, Karan.
Thank you. All right. All right, so that is it for this episode. I would like to thank my guest, Eric, for being on and sharing all that knowledge and giving us a little glimpse into the new film, Unmasking Hope. If you want to find him and look up this movie, you can go to www.ecproductions.com. Or you can also go to www.unmaskinghopethemovie.com, and you'll find, that's where you'll find like the trailer and all of that for that, and potentially even a date as to when they're looking to put it out. I'd like to thank all of you for listening and supporting me and being here, and just, yeah, continuing to listen to me ramble on about different things. So thank you so much. If you wouldn't mind, I would really love it if you would share this podcast with your friends, share this on your social media, let people know. I would really love to get this message out to everyone. And so you can find me on social media, Twitter and Instagram are at The Karanical. My blog is thekaranicalpodcast.blogspot.com. And then you can also email me at karanicalpodcast@gmail.com. And then you can also find me on Snapchat at KaranSB. All right. So that is it. Until next time.